Auckland Grey Power is pleased to sponsor this edition of Senior Focus.
Happy New Year, listeners. And that was Anne-Marie Curry's voice that is known to many of you. And Anne-Marie is a most wonderful woman and makes a lot of different things happen. And we've got much to thank her for. And as you'll remember from last year, our focus for these programs this time of the month is on transport. And today we're going to be looking at public transport in the Auckland area. And we're going to hear from Steve Cable today. Now, Steve has been a transport planner for many years. He has driven buses. He is involved in transport today in a variety of different ways. And so he's really well qualified to talk to us about public transport in Auckland. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Richard.
Well, Steve, we've known that Auckland Transport has been reviewing all the bus routes around Auckland, and they've been doing it in chunks. And I know in our street, we're going to have buses going up there soon. At the moment, there's these massive big jarabars or speed humps, which they're going to have to change, and people are getting nervous about what it's going to mean for parking and how do they get buses up this little street. So change is happening everywhere. Tell us, do you know how they've gone about this process?
Well, what happened was there was a change to the legislation that undergirds the planning process, and that has enabled the regional councils, who are the purchasers of the public transport system on behalf of the people, to really have, it's allowed them to have a good look at the way the systems work, the way that public transport works, the way in Auckland's case, how buses interact with trains, and that's going to happen a lot more. And so it's really been an opportunity that's been driven by legislation.
So what is the process? You know, what are some of the features of the change, particularly to the bus routes?
Well, it gives the regional council greater power to direct the bus services. Under the last legislation, which was brought in back in 1990, the bus companies were able to say that we're going to run this chunk of service, this particular route, at these times, and the local government really had no say.
I suppose that meant that they could just pick routes that were more profitable and ignore parts of town where they didn't think they could make money?
That's quite right. And even to the extent that they could, it was called a commercial service, and they could say that, well, we've had the situation in Devonport, where one bus company said we're going to run this service at no cost to the council, but basically from say 8 to 8:30, and what happened then was that the regional council looked at the timetable they wanted, and they basically had to put the remainder of the services out to contract, and we've had two different bus companies providing that service at different times. Mm. With the new service, they're able to, the regional council is able to say, well, we want company A, or we'll put out the tender for a company to give us a price to run that service, and it's integrated. It's not piecemeal.
Do you think this is a good idea?
Yes. It's some would argue that a public servant is not the best person to plan things, but on the other hand, it does mean that there is a viewpoint that is consistent across an area and an application of service that's consistent across the area.
So what will that mean for our listeners? I've heard that they have taken a position that there used to be lots of long meandering routes that you'd jump on the bus and you'd do a tiki tour of the, three or four suburbs before you got to your destination, and there'd only be one bus every hour or so.
Yeah.
It's changed. Can you tell us what the focus is today?
It varies from area to area. We've now got essentially a hierarchy of service where we've got rapid transit services that on the Isthmus in the west and the south are the rail services. On the North Shore and up into the Hibiscus Coast, we've got the Northern Express that runs down the busway. So we've got on one side of the bridge, we've got rail, on the other side, we've got big buses. Those services are providing the backbone, and what will happen increasingly is that there'll be feeders to the stations, to the railway stations, to the busway stations. And that means that rather than having the long buses maybe spending an hour and a half driving into the CBD, it frees up that bus maybe to make three or four trips back towards the local station from the suburb. So in theory, it means that you should be able to travel more frequently, but at the cost of having to get off a bus and onto the train, or off the bus and onto another bus.
Right, so that could be a little bit unsettling for some people until they get used to it, because they're used to they know when they get on that 809 route, it's going to take me all the way. I might have to be thinking about, I've got to get off now and wait for the next one.
And you put your finger on it there, is that it does bring a measure of uncertainty into that transfer from one vehicle to another. We live in Auckland. There's a possibility that it could be raining when that happens. You sat down, you've got comfortable, you've got your book out, you're starting to read, and all of a sudden you have to get up and change. Then you're not certain when your next train or bus is going to come. And with the trains, the transfers should be timed, but it's not a perfect world, and there will be delays at time and therefore uncertainty.
But am I right that on the upside, the frequency should increase so that you don't have to worry about actually the bus coming at a particular time, because you know that you'll never wait for particularly long at any one point?
In most cases, yes. There'll still be the occasional route that only runs every half hour.
Sure.
But with time, and certainly in Auckland over the last 10, 15 years, public transport is growing ahead of the curve. It's now at the stage where the buses across the Harbour Bridge are carrying more than half of the people in the morning peak. So that you get into a virtual cycle where the more people are using the service, the services, the frequency of the services goes up. In case of the trains, they can plug another couple of carriages on. And already on the busway in the morning peak, the Northern Express is running every 3 minutes. So you don't need a timetable for it. You just roll up there'll be one.
Talking about rolling and things going round, Central Rail Loop. that's underway. If you go downtown, you know, I was in Albert Street yesterday,
yes.
Massive holes in the ground. And tell us what difference is that going to make for our listeners?
Well, the difference it will make tomorrow if you go in is don't take a car. Seriously. It's there's so much congestion as a result of the construction that you're better to catch a train or a bus. Finding the place that you want and then looking for a park is a nightmare. What it means when it's in is at the moment Britomart is basically an in and out station. So the trains come in, they stop, they unload, they load, and they head back out the way they've come. And that involves delay, particularly I think there are only two tracks coming into the station in total. And that's basically a resource problem, that you've only got two tracks you can use. You've got to have a minimum timing between trains. What the new tunnels means is that the trains will be able to come in and head out in the opposite direction. So it's really lifting the lid on the rail services in Auckland.
And there are going to be more stations in areas through town where there are lots of apartment buildings where there are literally tens of thousands of people are going to be living.
Yes, so you'll be able to catch a train and there's going to be a station roughly around Victoria Street, so you'll be able to catch a train close to places like Smith and Coe's, Altea Centre, those uptown areas which are currently not so accessible from the trains. There's going to be another station at Karangahape Road and a bigger station at Mount Eden. So it's going to free up more of the CBD to people who are travelling by rail.
Hey, we're going to listen to a track by Sarah Vaughan, and it's called It Shouldn't Happen, but we're, I think, in agreement that it should happen.
Millions of stars playing tag in the sky. All of my much at stake, and then I wake up. It shouldn't happen to a dream. Lightning and clouds tuck the moon into bed. I feel your lips stand my heart on its head. Then comes the ache. Again I wake up. It shouldn't happen to a dream. The flowers get happy and dance in the lane. The darkness no longer is deep. We're meant for each other. Just for a while, you'll be with me, and then the bubble will break. Again I wake up. It shouldn't happen to a dream. lovers again, just for a while. You'll be with me and then the bubble will break again. I'll wake up. It shouldn't happen to a dream. It shouldn't happen, shouldn't happen to a dream.
Wonderful. Hey, it's good to be back, and thanks, Steve, for joining us today. We've just been talking a little about public transport in Auckland and particularly the Central Rail Loop, but we've got another type of mass transit vehicle coming on the scene or being talked about or planned for, and it's called different names, but some call it light rail. Tell us about some of the ideas being floated for this, Steve.
Well... Light rail basically is a return almost to the trams of yesteryear, but bigger, faster, better accelerating, and much nicer to travel in. I'm sure that many listeners who have been overseas will have travelled by light rail in Sydney, in Paris, and many cities around the world. And the beauty of light rail is that it can go where heavy trains can't, and it can also go where buses can't. So it can go from the streets into a dedicated, separate right-of-way where it just doesn't have to stop, except at stations.
And where are we likely to see light rail first?
I think the plan at the moment is for Dominion Road into the CBD, down Queen Street.
I've heard the same. So from Britomart up to Kingsland, and then the second stage from Kingsland to Mount Roskill. Yay, Mount Roskill! And then I think they're pretty keen on getting it out to the airport, so along State Highway 20 down to Onehunga, across potentially a new old Mungaree Bridge.
Yeah.
And then along the motorway corridor to the airport, which will be pretty exciting. There's also talk, I believe, out west, and perhaps even to your hood. So we're hearing a lot of different voices in this conversation about public transport. There are government, central government, local government, private, corporate. Who's part of this thing?
It's very much in the hands of local government now, with the exception that you've got central government basically making the rules, and with very large investments such as the CBD rail loop, potentially with light rail, having a major financial contribution to make. So that you've got regional government doing the planning work in Auckland, it's Auckland Transport, and then the next tier down is the public transport providers, who are the people who have got the wheels on the road or the steel on the rails.
Now, we used to see all sorts of coloureds and buses out there, but they all seem to be looking the same these days. Why is that?
Auckland Transport have chosen to provide a unified branding for the public transport, both rail and buses, using very similar logos and colours, then with different colours to define a service type. So if you look at the trains and the Northern Express I talked about earlier, they've got yellow on the front. If your local bus will have silver along with the blue and silver livery. It's basically so that some of us to try to avoid confusion as to which bus you get on. On the other hand, for people who have been very used to catching a brown and cream bus, whether it's a Birkenhead bus or a Howick and Eastern bus, it means you now have to look at the destination sign, the sign that's on the front or side of the bus, to find out if that's your 911 or your 802 or whatever, rather than hopping on a Birkenhead bus and it goes pretty much in the right direction. And that's even coming down to, with the new contracts, the drivers are also wearing a consistent uniform.
So I think things are going to be like a almost like a corporate thing coming up.
Yes.
We're going to listen to just another track from Sarah Vaughan. It was just one of those things. And then we're going to hear a little about a day in the life of a bus driver. Sarah Vaughan. Hey, welcome back, friends. Steve, you have spent a fair few hours sitting, steering a big bus around different cities. Tell us about a day in the life of a bus driver.
The principal thing about a day for a bus driver is that it is long. You start early, you finish late. You might have a couple of hours off in the middle of the day. It's I've been musing over this, and in some ways, one of the hardest things is that people are so nice. Almost everybody who gets off the bus, particularly in the peaks, will thank the driver. And it just becomes difficult to say you're welcome to everybody as they get off. So, hassles between the public and drivers are very, very rare. Where they come up, it's often because there are issues outside of the driver's control, such as traffic, an accident somewhere that causes delays. And because people are reliant on that bus to get them to the end of their journey, that they can get stressed and tense. So it's an odd way of life. As a driver, you just need to sit back and recognise that there are things out there that you just can't change, and you can't let them get to you.
So, what is it like driving something so big around seemingly such congested, tight, narrow streets?
It's no different from driving your own car in many ways, because it's what you're doing all the time. When you hop into your car, if you drive a European car, you've got to remember that the indicator's on the left-hand side of the steering wheel. If you're driving a Japanese car, it's on the right. It's those sorts of things that you just get used to in your own car. When you hop in a bus, you know that it's bigger, but you're used to driving it. And it's quite easy to see the extremities of the bus. It does have quite limited vision to the side. There are blind zones that you just can't see because the mirrors don't cover those areas, and that can be a source of stress. You've got to learn to basically work around those limitations. It's probably easier to put through a tight gap than it is a car. And from that point of view, it's not a difficult thing.
So, you're sitting a long way ahead of the wheels. Is that kind of weird?
No, it's not often that you actually, that the sensation is much different from driving behind a bonnet. It's okay. What you do need to watch out for is the length of the bus, and that when you're turning a corner, the inside back wheel is turning a lot tighter radius than the front, which means that if the road is narrow, the front of the bus is often over the centre line, simply for the rear wheel to be in the kerb.
Right. So, hey, we're going to have to wrap it up there. Hey, thank you so much for your time today, Steve. There's obviously lots more we could talk about. Maybe we could talk about it again sometime. So, listeners, thank you so much. Please send me a text on 021-277-1213 if you have any comments, or email me, richard@path.net.nz. Thank you so much for being with us this week. Thank you again, Steve. Thanks, Joe, for your help. We'll see you in 4 weeks' time. Bye-bye for now.
Get together with Senior Focus next Sunday at 5:25 p.m. on Planet FM 104.6, or listen online at any time at planetaudio.org.nz/Senior Focus. And do note, Senior Focus